Hello and welcome to China Cleantech. 商台创新. China Cleantech is a monthly podcast highlighting the most promising cleantech innovations and people emanating from the Chinese ecosystem. My name is Marilyn Wei Mali, and I'm joined by my co-host
Andrew Chang, Zhang Tiannong. It's a pleasure to be here. Today, we are excited to welcome Yuki Yu. Yuki Yu is the founder of Energy Iceberg, a research firm with a mission to bridge the knowledge gap for international companies, investors, and media regarding China's renewable and clean power market. She worked for China Southern Power Grid, one of the two state-owned utilities in China, as a researcher and an analyst. After 6 years, she decided to pursue her journey as an independent contributor for various international publications to help shed light on the Chinese power market and energy industry. Welcome, Yuki.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be here and share my views.
All right. So let's get started. So Yuki, tell us a little bit about your origin story and inspiration behind starting Energy Iceberg.
Sure. So since 2010, I spent 7 years, as you mentioned, work for one of the two major grid company in China. My job at that point was very interested is to report and research about the power and natural gas market, both on China and on the international experience. In that job that I have done, what I've done is a broader sense of research and reporting. I did quite some interviews and with the Chinese SOE leader, state-owned enterprises leaders, and their local employees in China or abroad, and actually quite a lot of energy experts and international even political leaders or business leader in the energy field. So that gave me quite a wider understanding and a wider horizon on understanding the industry and looking at the energy industry from different countries or different stakeholders' point of view. And then along the way, I realized that there is a massive knowledge gap between the outside world and China. There's also massive knowledge gap among different energy sectors. For example, if you're in the fossil fuel industry, you don't necessarily know what is going on in the power sector. So I see the massive needs for independent research to bridge those gaps. Meanwhile, I also grow much more interest in renewable and clean energy rather than or instead of fossil fuel sectors. So then I decided to leave the grid mostly for the job at that point is because it's on natural gas. I left the grid on 2016 and started my own research firm, initially working only as an independent researcher for different projects, mostly helping international companies and investors to understand and invest in China. So typically I would help a floating offshore wind developer to get into the Chinese market or to help some of the supplier to understanding how to get into the value chain. But then the one-on-one industry and independent research was very exciting for me, but I felt that I only help only a handful of players. And overall, the impact is still relatively limited in terms of bridging the gap. That's why I started my own website, Energy Iceberg, to share my knowledge to a broader audience last year, and also preparing information products tailored for different audience from now on. That is a little bit of my background story.
So you've worked for both Chinese and overseas news outlets and various trade publications. What would you say are some of the similarities and differences in the coverage of the energy sector?
Well, the similarity for me, it's very obvious. If you are an energy publication or a trade journal, no matter you are in China or abroad, your focus is on industry's interests. And your mission is probably to facilitate industry's growth or at a certain time be very critical on industry's development direction. So that is very similar. And the second similarity, I think, in the past decade especially, is that for both the domestic Chinese media and international trade journals, energy transition is a common and a central topic. No matter you are a, for example, wind publication or you are a fossil fuel focus publication, that on top of your work that energy transition is impacting everybody's business and therefore also impacting how people report and research on the industry. So, and that is the second similarity I see. And the differences is actually pretty understandable. In my eyes, the biggest difference is that the focus or the angle, how you look at the industry or how you look at different topic or different events or how you look at different incidents are different. That's natural because your audience are different. They have different interests. All of these publications are serving mostly industry players. So people working from a wind farm to producing a solar power panel. But their region is different, so therefore their market is different. So some of the topics are bombshell news to some Chinese media or Chinese trade journals. It could be completely irrelevant to the international audience. For example, if you have a major wind power tender in China, maybe everybody is reporting about that in China, but if there is no international investors or international supplier involved in the process, then the international journals wouldn't be not that interested in this type of story or topic. The second differences I see is that the interest on different topics, the stage of a different market, the feature or the characteristic of the market are different. So therefore, the interest of certain topic could be quite different. For example, in China, you will see that the emphasis on UHV, which is ultra high voltage or the grid technology. This is an important topic for the Chinese renewable media or renewable trade journals, but it's not so much for the European media nowadays. This is because the grid's role in the renewable market in China, it's more significant than that in the European market. So then oftentimes we also see there are different understanding on different technical terms or market terms. The most typical case would be smart grid in China, that when the media or the trade journals report about smart grid, the focus are usually about the voltage grid and the high voltage transmission grid. Whereas in Europe, it's much more focused on flexible grid or flexible distribution transmission system. So that's all the differences I could think of. And I think that's mostly because of the audience are different.
It's really interesting because I've read through a lot of your material, and it's for me who is based in Shanghai and who's someone who's, you know, reading ability in Chinese Mandarin isn't the best. I count on resources like yourself and Energy Iceberg to really fill me in on the power market in China. So I have to say the angle you're talking about for the various audiences and how you write to the various audiences really resonates with me. So yeah, thank you for that. Marilyn, I'm going to pass it over to you.
So Yuki, thanks so much for that overview. I also subscribe to Energy Iceberg and receive the newsletter. I think for the benefit of our listeners who may not understand the ecosystem and baseline energy mix in China, who are the major players in the domestic electricity market?
When we talk about, when we look at the electricity market, we talk about different market segments. So we talk about generation, electricity transmission, electricity trading, engineering, equipment manufacturing. So first of all, there are different segments. And I think most of the interests, I'm just guessing that most of the interests are on the generation or the transmission or a little bit on engineering sectors for maybe for your audience or for the foreign investors or foreign suppliers. And so with that in mind, in terms of the electricity generation market, the main player are the so-called the big five and the four smaller nobles. Actually, I just created that English name to try to reflect what they are called in Chinese, which is 五大和四小. So the big five, 五大, are the five largest power utility in China in terms of their asset size and their install capacity in power. Also, they have a massive influence on the Beijing's policymaking in terms of electricity policy. So initially, these five companies were formed around 2002 due to China's first power market reform. And these five initially were China Huaneng, China Huadian, China Power Investment, which later become State Power Investment Corporation, SPIC, and then China Guodian, and now become China Energy Investment Corporation, CEIC, and then China Data. So the new Big Five were formed recently around 2017 and 2018 due to a few merger and acquisition, but the Big Five are more or less the same as before. So, but their size just slightly bit different over the time. And then we have four smaller, but actually nowadays there are more. So I call them four and more smaller power companies. And then we're talking about China General Nuclear, State Development and Investment Corporation, SDIC, China Resources, most recently China Three Gorges, CTG, and CECEP, China Energy Conservation and Environmental Protection Group. So there are a lot of names out there. I can understand it's a bit confusing, but mostly we're talking about the tier one player are the five, big five, and then the tier two player are the smaller companies who is up and running. And the big five are mixed with different power assets. They will have all sort of power assets as from coal-fired power, hydropower, nuclear, only some have nuclear, and then renewable power. And then the smaller four, usually they're more focused on one or two specific areas. For example, China General Nuclear, it is the biggest nuclear player, nuclear power player in China, and is right now a big wind investor in China. And then you have CTG, China Three Gorges, initially is the world's largest hydropower developer in the world. Now it's also a major player in offshore wind. So that's a little bit of their background. Then in China, we also need to look at the grid companies, which is mostly in the power transmission segment. When we talk about grid companies in China, they are a little bit different from the European or US grid company, which is mostly in charge of the power transmission. In China, the grid company are not only in charge of the physical transition of the electricity, but also they are a heavy influencer on in terms of the power trading in the distribution grid market. So the two major grid companies are State Grid and China Southern Power Grid, which was my former employer. And actually, you also have some of the regional grid players, such as in West Inner Mongolia. So those are a little bit the situation in transmission market. And then you have the power construction and engineering market. There are only two major groups in China, which are Power China and China Energy Engineering Corporation.
And in terms of the generation companies, the grid companies, and the EPC contractors, are they all mostly state-owned or are there any privately owned enterprises?
All the power company I just mentioned are state-owned enterprises. In general, state-owned enterprises are much larger in terms of asset and their install capacity or their market portion are much larger than the private company. So everyone I mentioned here are state-owned.
So let's first talk about coal power. Can you walk us through the main tenets of the new coal power reform in China?
I think here you're referring to the coal power asset reform or what we call it a coal power asset restructuring that China launched just early this year. Is that the case?
Yes.
Okay, so the idea of that reform is to strip off some of the regional coal-fired power assets from the big five, the biggest five power company, but only of they are coal-fired power asset in five provinces in northwest of China, and then restructured that in total, I think, 48 power plants into five regional centralized coal-fired power companies. So it is a little bit like consolidate 48 companies into five in five provinces. So in the end, the result would be in one province, you will have one coal-fired power company. The restructuring is at the moment only as a pilot sort of project, reform project, because it only takes place in four provinces. But if the result turns out to be positive, the reform could be carried out in a larger scale. But at the moment, it's too early to tell yet whether it will for sure roll over to the whole country. And the whole idea of the reform is, on one hand, is to cap the coal power capacity. It's by consolidating this different power asset, we phase out some of the low efficiency coal-fired power plant, hopefully. And then we can cut probably a quarter of the power capacity, coal-fired power capacity of this region, cut down a quarter of them. And then a more important principle is to improve their efficiency and their finance, basically. At this stage that a lot of the coal-fired power business is not making a lot of money and have huge losses due to the whole situation in China capping coal-fired power generation. So by consolidate this asset, basically you would have less coal-fired supply in the market, and therefore you would expect they have better yield of their result and therefore lower their overall debt to equity ratio and therefore basically just improve the asset. So this reform is a little bit, it's happening, it's a small scale pilot project, but it happened in a backdrop of China's years of effort trying to cap in coal in terms of coal mining and coal fired power production growth. And also China's whole policy to replace coal with some alternative energy, including renewable, nuclear, hydro, cleaner energies.
So is there any scenario by which this new coal power restructuring could work in favor of meeting the Paris Agreement? Will there actually be coal plants taken offline as a result of the consolidation?
Overall, the whole scenario would be beneficial for Paris Agreement, I think, in principle. Because the whole transition is to capping coal consumption, and there will be less coal firepower and there will be less low efficiency coal firepower in the market. So in that terms, that it definitely helped China to lower its coal consumption. But of course, only in at the moment it's only at five provinces, it's a small scale. The impact is limited, but it means to start, it is a beginning. And if it roll over to the whole country, the significant would be, of course, more substantial. The whole idea to create stronger regional coal-fired power player may be also helpful because those players could push down, could have a better negotiation power to push down the coal price, the coal as a fossil fuel material, because at the moment the coal prices in China is on the rise since 2019. So in that case, the coal production may be reduced as well. Then I think Beijing also hope that by creating regional power players that can better coordinate between coal and renewable production in this region, that could be helpful for China to bring in a higher percentage of renewable as well. But then, of course, there are a lot of concern in the market in terms of how does this reform gonna be executed and carried out. The focus is that of this reform is to actually help those coal-fired power to survive. So that always leave a little bit question that whether it's not reformative enough in terms of the coal-fired power sector. And the second concern, I think, is to, because China going to create more regional, you can call them monopolies. So whether you create this type of regional integrated players or monopolies, maybe they could war against the idea of promoting renewable in the region. So there are risks there as well.
Wouldn't, if the goal of these regional coal monopolies would be to negotiate for lower prices, wouldn't that make coal more attractive? So I guess walk me through how that scenario would actually lead to cleaner energy.
The regional player, of course, they have different negotiation power. That meaning from the upstream, which is coal mining, they have a better negotiation power over what is the price of the coal mining over the coal mining sector. That means that they could get the coal as a product and a cheaper price. And therefore, for the coal mining sector, that means the price of coal could drop a bit. And therefore, it will limit the market to produce more coal in that terms. But of course, that the concern would be if they have bigger power in terms of using coal-fired power over renewable power. So in that case, we're talking about downstream power generation. And if that happens, that would have impact on renewables penetration into the power system. Would that make sense for you?
Yes, but it would impact in a negative way if we're looking at a climate scenario, right? So essentially, cheaper coal mining means cheaper products to feed the power plants, the coal power plants, which means cheaper coal production, which means more attractive in terms of purchasing that coal compared to a more expensive energy resource. Is that correct?
The more complicated way to look at it is because that you have different policy in place in the power market to regulate different portion. China have a renewable energy law, not 100% sure which year. I think it's 2016 or even earlier that we have that law in place. And in that law, it strictly states that renewable power, clean power, so solar, hydro, wind power, should be prioritized in the whole grid sequence and the whole dispatch sequence. So in terms of when you produce enough renewable from a renewable power plant, the grid should take them first to their dispatch order. And that is a policy have been long exists in China. The grid have been for years argued that there is some technical difficulty to execute fully this policy. And also due to some of the market setup in China, because the whole who take what percentage in the grid is sort of negotiable in a certain way. So the policy is not 100% strictly executed that the renewable taken policy. So along the way, then we see the trend that the government is trying to carry out the policy stricter. And we also have a policy that require every province to fulfill a certain percentage of renewable. Every province had a target that every year, how many renewable needed to be consumed? What is the percentage of renewable they need to be consumed? So in that case, that all these policy are already in place to make sure that renewable taken a solid place in the power mix.
Right. It sounds complex. And so we should definitely watch this space in terms of the consolidation to see how that brings about any shifts in terms of the actual consumption of renewable energy versus fossil fuel energy in China. Let's move on to the green or low carbon or renewable part and talk about offshore wind. What is the share of offshore wind right now in China, and how is that shifting?
That would not be a lot because offshore wind actually started to... We saw the first action to invest in offshore wind in China was around 2010 or so. But the market was seriously started to invest in offshore wind basically since 2018 or so. So at the moment, the offshore wind market is not prominent in terms of its percentage in the total power mix. So at the moment that wind and solar is each about, I think wind is about 11% of the total power capacity. But majority of those are onshore wind.
That's still pretty significant in terms of the industry really starting around 2010. One last question on offshore wind. From your perspective, what would really accelerate the deployment and installation of offshore wind capacity, and importantly, the grid connection so that the consumption actually will closely match that production?
I think at this point, a major issue of offshore wind is related to the subsidy. China planned to provide a really high national subsidy for offshore wind for a while, but then last year decided to sort of the subsidy will sunset next year, also for offshore wind. But at the moment, the offshore wind is at a point that it just started to sell off, but then the cost of the offshore wind is not to the level that they can survive by themselves. So in that terms, that all the projects are building up quickly so that they can ensure they will get the national subsidy. But after that, after 2022, basically, technically, the national subsidy will be gone. At that point, it's still relatively uncertain for the industry to understand that would regional government provide extra subsidy? Would the national government provide it extra financial incentive to help them to survive? Because offshore winds probably still need about 4 or 5 years to become to the level that they can sort of survive by themselves without subsidy. Before that target is achieved, that the industry still needs some policy incentive or some help from the government to help them bridge this process. So in that point, so in that sense, that policy is essentially still a very essential part of determining whether the offshore wind market could scale off in the coming years. And second things that you mentioned is about the grid connection. Actually, China's offshore wind market is not so much facing a problem of grid connection compared to where the onshore wind and the solar PV sector is facing. The reason is because that most of the offshore wind in China is built along their coastline, which is the east of China. And the power consumption area in China is the east region or the coastal regions. So all these power plants are relatively easy to connect to what basically the higher value-added power market. So in that terms, that there's not a lot of grid backlog or grid investment cluster with the offshore wind market facing.
Perfect. Yeah, thanks, Yuki, for that. You had an article specifically about offshore wind, and you had this great graphic that describes the total planned offshore wind figures, 74.72 gigawatts, cumulative installed 5.1 gigawatts. In your article, can you tell us a little bit, just very quickly, what are some of the developments and pilots happening within the offshore wind sector? So you had mentioned, I believe, Shanghai government has put together a consortium, and there's some several pilot projects going along the way. Could you describe those?
I think at the moment, the biggest area in Chinese offshore wind market is in three provinces mostly, which is Jiangsu, Fujian, and Guangdong. Especially Guangdong, we know south of China are planning a very aggressive or ambitious plan for offshore wind. It have approved already, I think Guangdong alone at least have 66 gigawatt of project planning, but not in terms of the short term, in a really long term till 2025, 2030 or so. But still, it's a very massive amount in terms of any regional offshore wind market. So when we take a look at those provincial market, you see that they have big plans in the coming decades for offshore wind. And so I would say that the focus is on Guangdong, on Fujian, and on Jiangsu. And lately, we also see some of the regions are getting interest in offshore wind. Previously, they have no offshore wind turbine build up at all. But you see Shandong province, which is a big seafood production area in China, they are also planning, I think, 16 gigawatt of project for the coming 10 years. And not only in terms of the scales, they also have some brilliant idea. Shandong wants specifically to combine offshore wind and seafood production, floating wind, hydrogen production, all this frontier technology together to develop more the advanced technology offshore wind farms. So in that sense, it's a very exciting market to look into because it's much more open in terms of opportunity and foreign technology.
Two last questions for you, Yuki. What can we expect from the Chinese renewable industry 5 years from now? And what roles can international partnerships play to accelerate the transition to a clean energy economy?
Well, actually, my view is not so bullish. First of all, I see the market is likely to see a dip, basically a down cycle in terms of new capacity connected to the grid. This is mostly due to that China gonna end the national subsidy for renewable power, mostly wind and solar. But the dip would happen basically around 2021 to 2022-23. But after that, I do see that the growth will continue. And 5 years from now, we will could for sure expect that wind and solar take up a larger portion in China's power portfolio. There's no question about it. And then in terms of international partnership, if we are looking at the conventional market, so talking specifically on wind and solar, those markets in China are rather established. So in that area, probably international partnership or international investors or supplier would be still facing a lot of difficulty and challenge to get into this market, or maybe it could be even more difficult due to that the market is rather established and there are a lot of Chinese players and money in the market. However, as I mentioned at my final point of changes 5 years from now, that the market will see more hybrid plants, and that also mean that there are new and emerging area in terms of technology, in terms of hydrogen production, green hydrogen, how to combine battery and renewable, how to optimize wind farm or solar production. Those are the area that China will started to look into. And in those areas, I do see that the international technology player and the international supplier could bring in really valuable experience and could help to speed up the whole process.
The deep dive between comparing the two, I mean, obviously she covers a lot with Energy Iceberg, the entire energy mix, but you know, we got to focus on coal and wind and sort of comparing and contrasting the two. It still feels like coal isn't going away anytime soon. You know, it's being slowed down and there's going to be more regulation restrictions.
It's the incumbent. So coal is the most carbon intensive fossil fuel, and it was still, you know, about 57% of energy consumption in 2019 in China. So it is complex, and I think you're right. It's not going anywhere anytime soon, at least based on the current policies. There is, as Yuki mentioned, a new plan, a new five-year plan being negotiated and debated right now. So there's an opportunity to shift that in a pretty drastic way, but the outcome is not yet decided.
I'm hearing a sort of both sides of the story. I was in Shenzhen this past week, and speaking to someone who works in Inner Mongolia and does drilling and is very familiar with the coal-fired power plants out there, and his network is very much in that field. And it seems like a lot of these plants that were at first halted, like with permitting and whatnot, have started again this year. Since COVID, it seems that to sort of get the economy up and running again, some of these coal-fired power plants are sort of going back online. And at the dinner table, it's interesting, we were speaking to another gentleman who manages a very substantial fund for government, Chinese government entities, was saying, hey, you should stop doing that and invest more in renewables. And, you know, it was very interesting to see both worlds and both perspectives. And I think that's where a lot of the complexity is, depending on which industry you're in, as Yuki mentioned, and what angle you're taking it from.
China is investing in both clean and dirty at the same time, right? So both the fossil fuel base sources and the renewable energy base sources. And it would be nice to see the net come out in favor of the clean. And I think that, you know, there's I think the outline that Yuki provided us with who is doing what is very important, because you do have you know, the five big and the six, the five big and the four smaller players that are dominating that. And if you could have those players, those nine players collectively, you know, unified and having a consensus around the clean, I think that would be very helpful. And so that, you know, that could be potentially a new episode. And there's so much to cover here. There's nuclear, there's other generation, there's hydro, you know, large scale versus in stream. A lot we couldn't get to, of course, given the time, but I just think this is so rich and there's so much ground to cover. I thought what was really the most interesting part for me was actually what Yuki said up front around the Western versus Chinese coverage of the energy markets in general in China, and how there was a lot less interest in ultra high voltage or UHV transmission and the grid in the West. And that is by far the most important thing. So in order to have this full transition and have all of these intermittent renewable energy resources on the grid, you need a grid that can handle that and can dispatch accordingly. And that's not the case today. And so that's why, you know, independent alternative coverage of China energy markets is crucial. And so Energy Iceberg is a crucial resource to help bring those very important parts of this equation to the world outside of China.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, ultra high voltage lines, I mean, it doesn't get more important than, you know, producing your energy from hydropower plants in Sichuan and powering Jiangsu province and Shanghai with that energy. And in order to travel thousands of kilometers for energy to reach these big cities, you need a reliable grid. And so that's why so much importance is put on the grid and improving that technology. And so, it's a lot of great coverage from Energy Iceberg on that. I wish we had covered EVs. You know, like just being in Shenzhen, right? You get out of the airport and you go away in the taxi line, and it's just like the entire taxi fleet are BYD electric cars or electric taxis. You know, from the airport to the city, it's all BYD electric buses, and every scooter on the street is all electric scooters. And plus, you know, there's the renewal of the new energy vehicle incentives and subsidy program where you get tax benefits and incentives for getting a new energy vehicle. So it's all very promising in terms of the EV market. And it's also interesting, at least in Shanghai, the amount of Model 3s that I've been seeing in my apartment compound and just in Shanghai in general. And so the EV market between BYD, NIO, Tesla is definitely very heated at the moment. And it's good to see that competition.
Right.
Because that's going to increase more innovation, increase more adoption.
Right. And they will also put more strain on the grid, and that's back to the UHV just the robustness of the grid to handle all of these sources and batteries and distributed resources. But we will have an episode on that, on EVs. And so we'll cover it.